All right, how you doing?
Good.
Had a lot of sharing, and the Lord just kind of told me something back there that I think what we're going to do is maybe we'll discuss it and figure out how to fit in the schedule. But I think what we'll do, and it came to my mind the day after Christmas when we were here, is it seems like God's doing some really cool stuff in people's lives, and even for the people that you're not finding God in the midst of this stuff, it's a good thing. Then maybe we just need a good old-fashioned testimony Sunday sometime so people can share. What do you think?
Yeah.
So I think that might be good. So we'll do that sometime this year. So I'll let you know when that's coming, or maybe I won't. So we'll figure it out. But today I want to talk about desire. Now, before Christmas I talked about want, but I'm really not going to talk about wants. We're going to talk about desire. It's really a different thing. Everybody okay? You need to stretch? Do some calisthenics or anything? Everybody good? I'll do them for you. There we go. All right. So we're going to talk about my desire. My desire. And in doing so, I want to share a story. A story about a guy named Socrates. Anybody ever heard of Socrates? Or if you watched Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Socrates? But Socrates is known as the father of modern philosophy, and there's a story about desire, and a story goes that a young man who wanted to look good in the eyes of Socrates came, and he wanted knowledge. He had a desire for knowledge, and he said, "Oh, great Socrates, I come to you because I desire knowledge." And Socrates recognized this pompous numbskull as he looked at him, and he said, "Well, come with me, young man." And they went, and they got into the water. And they got into the water about waist deep. And Socrates says, "What is it you desire?" And he said, "I desire knowledge, O Socrates. That's why I've come to you." So Socrates took the young man, and he dunked him under the water and held him down there for some time, and he pulled him back up, and the man said, Socrates said, "What is it that you desire?" And he said, "As I said, I desire knowledge, O great Socrates. That's why I came to you." So Socrates looked at him again, and he pushed him back down in the water and counted 30 seconds, 35, 40. And he pulled him back up, and he says to the man, "What is it you want, young man? What is it you desire?" And between heavy, heavy breaths, the man said, "Knowledge, oh wise and wonderful." And before he got done, Socrates shoved him back down in the water. 35, 40, getting close to 50. And he pulled him back up and he said, "What is it you desire, young man?" And he said, "Air, air, I need air." And Socrates answered and said, "When you want knowledge, as you have just wanted air, then you will have what you desire in knowledge." Isn't that a neat story? That we all say things that we desire. I desire this. Oh, if I just had that. If I could be this. If I could have this kind of thing. If I could do this. And we all desire something. You know, I was hoping, and my desire today was that we were all going to be lifting up prayers that the Eagles and Ravens would get past this last hurdle as they go on to play each other in the Super Bowl that I desired so much. Oh, we can always hope next year, can't we? Right? So we all have different desires. If you look on your sheet, I have a definition that I found of desire. It's to wish, to long for, to crave. It's a longing, a craving, as for something that brings satisfaction or enjoyment. That is desire. So I figured the best way to really find out about what we desire is to have a game show today, okay? So in order to have a game show, I need six contestants as we're going to play What Do You Desire? Okay? So I need six people that would like to come up very briefly and join me. And if not, I will pick you. Okay? So who would like to be? Come on down, Patty. Let's hear it for Patty. Let's go. Okay? And I need another one or another five. Let me see. Faith, you come on down. We'll let you join us here. You're so honest. You come on down. Let's hear it for Faith. All right. Do I have to start picking? Because I will. Okay. Any other volunteers? Come on down, Teresa. There we go. Oh, we need a male volunteer. Dave, come on down. Come on, Dave. All right. Great. All right. Let's see. We need another one here. There we go. Dave, there we go. Ooh. All right. Chris, come on down. You can join us, Chris, here. And let me see, how many we have here? Need one more. And let's see, I will pick Miguel. Here he comes. Miguel, let's hear from Miguel, a contestant. All right. So here we go. I'm going to first, and the table is going to be the great place here today, because the first thing I have here is I have some ripe, nice bananas. Okay? Does anybody here desire a banana? Anyone? You just would sit back and say, man, I'm desiring a banana. We have one. Chris, good. Okay, good. What about some nice, ripe donuts? Here they are. Dave, aren't you glad I asked you to be part of our show? There we go. Okay. So we have some donuts. We have chocolate-covered, chocolate-filled. We even have a glazed one that looks like a heart. Isn't that nice? So it goes right into your body and attacks your heart. You know, it's great. It's beautiful. So of those of you here, I have malty donuts and I have bananas. How many of you are craving the banana over the donut right now? You desire the, really, I mean, put aside all the health stuff. How many of you would rather have the donut? Anybody? How many would you like to have the donut? Really, donuts over bananas?
You want donut or banana?
Banana. Banana? Banana. Oh, wow, we got a lot of here. Okay, anybody else? You don't want any? Oh, wow. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to let you have this, or in the spirit of Monty Hall, I have something much more exciting in here. And so I'm going to start, you can have one of these, or I'm going to start with Faith. Okay? You ready, Faith? You can have one of these, or in my bag here, I have something that will add a, what do I want to do here? Something, I have food that will never spoil, will never go rotten, anything. Does that sound pretty cool? That you have food that you always have? Would you trade your donut or your banana for food that would never spoil? You wouldn't. Okay. All right, so we'll hold on here. Would anybody else? All right. Okay. Now, Miguel, I'm going to ask you. You can stay right there, okay? Miguel, in this bag here, I have something that can bring your youth back to you. I've got something right here that will have you feel younger than you have in years in this bag. Does that sound appealing to you?
Sure.
Okay, great. All right. So, Miguel, you remember what I promised you? Patty. I have something that can bring a little bit of light into your life. Light into your life. Just a little bit of light. Huh? Okay, she can't hear. She forgets. So a little bit of light for you, Patty. It can bring a little bit of life. Light. A little bit of light. Does that sound good? Okay, good. All right. So you would trade these because you didn't want them anyway. Okay. So, all right. Teresa. Okay, well, hold on. We'll see. Teresa, I have something that will clean up areas of your life. Okay? I have something that will clean up areas of your life. Are you ready for it? Is that something more appealing than the donut or the banana? No, it's something, I mean, you don't have to work hard. It's something that will clean up your areas of your life. Does that sound good? Okay. Okay, yes. Dave, I've got something that will make your life normal. Okay, but I really think that this might be a good thing for you. So, does that sound good? Now, you didn't want the... Is there anybody else who would like the food that doesn't spoil? Anybody else? Any other contestants from the crew? Okay, we got the donuts. Okay, what about... let me see, make sure we got youth and life. I've got, Chris, I forgot. Chris, you were so settled on the banana, I forgot. I've got something that can bring pep to your life. Can make it happy. Peppy. Does that sound good? All right, he said, yeah. I got him off the banana by pep. Yes. All right. So, we're going to begin with Faith. You didn't want. Does anybody else want the food that didn't spoil anybody? Come on down. You can come on down. Food that won't spoil. Come on down. Here we go, Jenny. All right. Faith, you wanted the banana, right? Okay, here you go. Because you were so faithful to the banana, I'll give you two. You can give it to your dad so he won't go to sleep. All right. Miguel, you can stand right over here behind them. I'm going to start with Jenny. Let me see here. Jenny, I give you food that will never spoil.
All right. Thank you.
There you go. It's a banana. Let's see. Who? Pep, bring Pep back to your life. That's what you wanted, right?
Right.
And I'll give you a banana, too. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
So, Chris, I'll give you that. But I'll give you the energy, five-hour energy. There you go. That will bring Pep to your life. There we go. Let's hear it from you. All right. Patty, you wanted something that would add a little bit of light to your life. Come on over here, Patty. You sure that's what you want? Here you go. Little tiny lighters. There you go. A little bit of light added to your life. Okay, let's go. Teresa, I offered you something that would clean up your areas of your life. Come on over, Teresa. For you, I've got you flushable wipes. There you go. Okay. That will clean up areas of your life. Miguel, I promised you that I would bring your youth back to you. Am I right? Come on over here, brother. I got you the latest edition of Tiger Beat magazine. There you go, man. All right. There you go. Okay. Tell me what Justin Bieber's doing. And Dave, come. I'm going to let you get your donut first, but I really felt that this was something that would bring normalcy to your life. And so I bought you pitted prunes. There you go. Thank you for playing What Is It You Desire? Have a donut or something else on your way out. Here you go. Let's hear it. Dave, come get your donut. Come, you can get your donuts. All right. There you go. Interesting, isn't it, that when we think what we desire, when it's put in ways that we desire, I would love to give you something to add youth back to your life. He got his donut, all right. And his prunes, so. Isn't it interesting that we think in life there's things that we need and we desire and we gotta have. And when it's put in certain ways, it's very, very appealing to us, isn't it? When it's put in ways, I got something that'll add a little bit of life, and somebody gives us a little bit of light, and we're like, oh, that's great. Or when we have wipes or prunes or whatever else. Little tiny things. I mean, Miguel, when's the last time you touched the Tiger Beat magazine in your life? Never? Okay. Well, it's always the first time for everything, right? Yeah, you feeling younger yet? No. Makes me feel old. Try going through Walmart buying the things I just bought and handed out. I mean, I bought flushable wipes, prunes, and a Tiger Beat magazine. I mean, you know. And I felt compelled to tell the lady, I usually don't buy these things, you know. You know. She must, and energy, she wants to say, what in the world? They called the police on me. Okay. Anyway. The things I do for God, okay.
Well, you have to have energy
in the world. Yeah, but I'm not sure about the prunes and other stuff, but. We need to test our desire for God, and that's what it is. I was talking with a friend of mine, a lady who's been very strong in my spiritual journey. And one of the things she was sharing is that a pastor who's known for a lot of healing and a lot of things like that had said, has changed his whole entire ministry to the point where he said, people want to see the power now. And he said, but what I'm really finding in my life, it's not the power that God wants us to really focus on, it's his presence. You know, we just need to begin, you know, we're in the consumer show me, I want to see, have it happens, prove it to me time. We want to see that. But I think God just wants us to seek him and desire him. You know, like in my relationship with my wife, that, you know, we have a good relationship. And, you know, she said, She says she loves me. I got the papers to prove it. You know, she married me. But yet, to me, the time that's most important is when I know she loves me because she desires to spend time with me, that she desires just me, you know? I mean, that's kind of odd that she desires me. Don't you think that? I mean, when you think about someone desiring your presence, you're around. Now, there's probably many times where she doesn't desire my ignorance, but she desires my presence, just me being around. And often it takes time when we disconnect with people or someone passes away that we lose that presence, and we have taken that presence for desire. So I want you to look at your sheet down here on number 2 in testing our desire. And I want you to look at this verse that David writes, and we're going to come back to it. But he says, "You, God, are my God. Earnestly I seek you. I thirst for you. My whole being longs for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water." Let me ask you something, ladies. If your significant other wrote you this letter and said, "Honey, you are my sweetheart. I earnestly desire to spend time with you. I thirst for you. My whole being longs for you." Does that get you some points? Do you think so? You put them in the nut. You wonder what's going on. But what I'm saying is that would convey something to you, wouldn't it? Convey something to you. The first thing I want to talk about is, you know when you found God, because that's what we're talking about here. You know when you found God is when you develop a spiritual appetite, a hunger and a thirst for God. Both those things. That's that first thing on the back of your sheet. You develop a spiritual appetite, a hunger and thirst for God. I want to, one of the great pastors and theologians and teachers of our time, A.W. Tozer. Anybody ever heard of him? A.W. Tozer made the statement that's printed on your bulletin today. And he said, "Oh God, I have tasted thy goodness, and it has both satisfied me and made me thirsty for more. I am painfully conscious of my need to further grace. I am ashamed of my lack of desire. Oh God, the triune God, I want thee. I long to be filled with longing. I thirst to be made thirsty still." That seemed like he kind of... It tells you a couple things there. It tells you that he has a desire for God. But every time he goes to God, his thirst is quenched for that time, but he wants more of God. And he wants more of his presence. And he wants to spend more... It's very similar to what David's saying in this verse here. That there's an incredible desire. An incredible desire to have him. The great teacher Jonathan Edwards said about authentic spiritual experience. He said, "You become satisfied with God for who..." This is how you know you have an authentic spiritual experience with God. That you become satisfied with God for who he is, not for what you want him to do for you. Because I would say many of us become Christians and we want God to be just like our earthly fathers, maybe even more so than our earthly fathers, that we have a problem, we want God to fix it. We need this, we want God to give it out. God is the great drive-up window in our fast food spiritual service. And we go up and we say, "Hey, God, I need a spiritual McNuggets right now." Boom, he throws it to you. I'm feeling down. I need a spiritual Happy Meal, even with the little toys in there. We tell God that's how we want it. Boom, boom. God, I come to you. God, you give to me. And that's how we start. But I want to challenge you that in order to desire God and to really have, according to what is considered here as from Jonathan Edwards, as authentic spiritual experiences, is to desire God for who he is. God. That's it. Just desire God because he's God, not for what he can do for us. And that's hard, isn't it? Because we're often taught, you go to God, cast all your cares. We go to God with all our cares and all our cares. How many times do we just go to God because he's God? You know? And those things are important. So stay there with me with that. The next thing is, you know you're moving toward God when this happens, when you feel far from God. And you sit, now, some of you may be sitting there and saying, that makes absolutely no sense. Yes, it does. You have to have met God or been you know, what you find here is you never find in the Scripture, ever, that people long after God and long for God if they've never been introduced to him. The longing for God comes because they've had an experience with him. They've had an encounter with God. And what I believe more than ever is the reason why many people don't desire God is because they've never had an authentic spiritual experience. They've never really been introduced to God personally. They know the God who is in stained glass. They know the God of judgment and wrath. They know the God who, with his finger and fire, wrote the Ten Commandments. They know the God who put plagues. They know the God who sent his son Jesus. But they have never really met him. So I want to ask you today if you met God. And one of those indicators is if you have met God, there's a longing to spend time with him again. I can tell you there's times in my life, and I've always looked at it this way, that when there's times in my life where I feel really close to God. Really, really close. You know, I could sing that since we did some hymns today, I could sing the old hymn, In the Garden, and he walks with me and he talks with me. He tells me I am his own, and I feel like that's really cool. And there's other days I'm like, God, who, what, where, when, how? You know, you with me? Yeah. And in those days, I realize that what it is not because I've never had an encounter with God, but it's because of those days of walking and talking and everything's good. I miss that, and I miss that connection with him, and I miss, even after I'm done walking and talking with him, when I really desire God, I want more of that walking and talking with him. You know what I mean? I would dare say if we went around this room that many of the people in this room have spiritual high points. That there was a time at an altar where you knelt and boom, you felt the presence of God. Or there was just a time where you were in a service and the music was playing and all of a sudden it just felt like it was you and Jesus and nobody else. Am I right? And dare I say with that, there's been several other experiences and maybe more experiences where you felt like that. Am I right? But you desire the walking and talking with me. So how do we do that? Look at what this verse from Acts chapter 17 talks about. This is where the Apostle Paul is in Athens. He spent some time walking around and he learned something that I think is very important for us today. That I dare say that you will find people who are religious, people who are spiritual, people who want some kind of God-type connection, all right? I'd say that's the majority of people today. And the Apostle Paul goes in to Athens, and he says to them, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, he says to them, I see you're very religious. You have gods to everything. You even have something to an unknown God. And then he begins to share who he uses that unknown God to tell them about Jesus, about God, who is the real God. And he begins to share that with him. And what he realized is you can be religious and be far from God. You could be a card-carrying member of whatever church or organization you've been from ever and been there since birth and still be far from God. And that's hard for us to understand. But what I'll tell you, in my own spiritual life lately, my walk, God has led me to the Old Testament lately. And that may seem weird because, you know, for Christians, we should just be all about the New Testament, right? But I haven't forgotten the New Testament. The New Testament is a fulfillment of the Old Testament. But God has just displayed some things with me, particularly in the book of Chronicles, where you have King David, who his entire life went from shepherd boy to Goliath killer to warrior to king. God anointed him king long before the Goliath and everything else. He had to claw and grab and fight and get all the way to the point where he got where God wanted him. And then he turns and hands it over to his son Solomon. And Solomon is known as what? What did we know Solomon for? Wise. He wanted wisdom. And Solomon, we think of Solomon has this great wisdom. But I challenge you to read the end of Solomon's life. Solomon was a wreck, and Solomon had intermarried with so many different people, he began to accept the gods, and he had a lack of tolerance. He had no tolerance policy, and everything was accepted. He didn't hold on to the statues and the commitment and the desire for God as his father did. And it was Solomon in all his non-wisdom toward the end of his life that created, if you ask me, the area for Israel to fall off the face of the map. Because he lost a desire for God. And as I look around the world today, I see people who are Christians by cards. I see people who are Christian by mouth. And yet I see a lack of desire for the presence of God. And what begins up happening is I begin to talk to people and I find people are disheartened with God and disheartened with church because God's not granting these requests and God's not doing this. And I don't see God here and I don't have it here. But maybe it's because we've lost a desire for Him as Him, just as Solomon did. And my question is the church going to end up like Israel, where God will leave a remnant and renewal? Because we need to desire Him more. Paul understood this. And listen to what he said. He said, God did this. He's talking about sending his son. And he said, God did this so that they would, what? Seek him and what? Perhaps reach out for him. You know what the definition of that is? Desire him. God allowed sin and everything to happen so that we would do one thing. Desire him. Desire him. And reach out for him and do what? Find him. Isn't that cool? That the whole purpose of Jesus coming into the world, yes, it's salvation and everything else, but God did it and created that point of separation, allowed that separation of sin and everything to occur so that we, not him, that we might seek him, reach out for him, and find him. Even though what? He's not far from any of us. Isn't that cool? We may feel like God is way far away, but as soon as we go and we look and we seek him, bam, we find him because he's right there. That is a great and loving God. So what we need to do with this is we need to have some special appetite practices. Okay, here's some of our appetite practices. Number one, your parents have told you this for years, and these are spiritual appetite practices. Don't ruin your appetite. Don't ruin your appetite. Now, as anybody... is anybody planning on eating lunch at this rate, dinner, after church today? Anyone? You got something cooking? A roast, something like that? You going to go out to eat? What? Who's going to go out to eat or get something to eat? Okay, what if I made you eat the rest of those donuts? Would that spoil your... Yes, it would spoil your appetite. You wouldn't have a desire for that. And I believe that we spoil our appetite, our desire for God. Remember David said, I hunger, I thirst for you. I believe we spoil our appetite all the time with other stuff. We spoil it. The main thing we spoil it with is something called sin. All that stuff that we think is good for our lives, it isn't. Boom. We aim in that direction and we go and get it. And we like, I'm full now. But then we realize we're empty again. And we still have a craving. You know, when we ate down at Disney and Epcot, it's got a place in Germany that is the best food ever. It's like a smorgasbord, and if you get there before 2:45, you can get like the lunch menu, but at 4:00, they switch to the dinner menu. See? Jewish blood still running through me. Got it. You know? And you can eat, last time we ate there twice, didn't we, Judy? Ate there twice, and it's like, they got pretzel rolls, little rolls, like our pretzels, and you can eat them, and you can stick like all kinds of meat, and I don't care what it is, I can stick it in there and eat it, I know it's good. And then they'll play little German songs and play like the Ricola thing, you know, it's really cool. And you can eat and eat and eat and eat, and the last time we went, I said, I am not eating any, I'm going to make sure I just eat. Lady would come over and said, are you done? Or are you still working on that? I'm working on that, you know. You know, the kind where you just scratch your belly. And, you know, you had to roll me out, you know, by the time I was done. And guess what happened? You know, there's something. I ate and ate and ate and ate and ate and ate. Even as I was leaving the place, I grabbed something off the smorgasbord, made sure I had both hands full, eating as I'm going, right? You know what I mean? You've done it before. And I've eaten, and I'm full. I can't eat another thing. And guess what happened a few hours later? I was hungry. That's what we do to God all the time. We say, wow, you know, I want to get involved in this. I want to do this thing. I want to spend my time. I want to spend my energy in this. I want to do that. Oh, that appeals to me. And we get, or with a person, and we get so wrapped up into that thing. And then we recognize, wow, there's still some hunger in me, in my spirit. I need something. Or we may live life for a long, long time, and then we're going and we're doing something. We're spending our time doing this. And we're saying, we make excuses for not being in church. We make excuses for not being part of small group. We make excuses for not being part of the new men's ministry. And we start those things, and then we go, I really don't feel that close to God. Wonder why? Because we're not eating at the right table. We're spoiling our appetite. So that's the first thing, spoiling our appetite. Next thing is, we need to get to know God personally. God is, I think one of the things God hates the most is that people love to throw him way out here somewhere. Where the whole reason why he created us was for fellowship with us. When sin separated us, he sent his son to live, suffer, die, and resurrect again so he could reconnect us. And I think the thing that breaks God's heart the most is that we think that he's just way up there. And we keep him segmented or compartmentalized in our lives. And he's over there. We need to know God, get to know God's personality. There are so many attributes of that within the scriptures about God's personality and getting to know him and making it personal. David said, because you are my God, I will seek you. And here's the thing to really remember when you really feel distant and when you really feel disconnected is this thing here. God desires you. God desired you long before you ever desired God. There's a great statement, and it goes with a term called prevenient grace, that there's one grace of God, undeserved favor, but prevenient grace means that God extended his love and undeserved favor to you long before you ever, even when you were a mess. And if you're still a mess, God still has that love for you. And you don't do anything to deserve it, but God just extends it to you. And so there's a great term for prevenient grace called this, that God is the hound dog of heaven. You ever seen a hound dog? Right? Until they find it. Until they find the donuts. They go that way. God is sniffing you out and searching you out until you turn and recognize who he is. He wants to know you and wants to have a relationship. I don't care. I'm going to tell you right now. I don't care what you've done. I don't care what you're doing. God doesn't care what you've done. He doesn't care what you're doing, but he loves you enough not to leave you in the same mess that you're in. And he's seeking you in that mess. God looking you out, searching you out. We're told that the Spirit searches all things. So you're not going to shock God. He just wants to have a relationship with you. So there are the appetite actions. So I want you to jump with me. Everybody good still? Okay. Eagles and Ravens aren't playing. It's all good. So here we go. Desire in action. And in order to do that, I want to show you how David gave that in 1 Chronicles, the verse that Jill read for us today. And there's some really important things that David shares here about his nature and about what he did. Now, number one, we learn, this is an important verse. Write this down. If you have your Bibles, write it in there. Don't worry, God won't kill you. It's your life manual. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 1. This is the first place in the Bible that Satan is called by name, Satan. Every other one where you see Satan will have a pronoun in front of it. Ha-Satan, which means the accuser. This one calls him accuser, Satan. Okay? So there's a little bit here. What we have here is when Satan stirs us, our desires get two things. Because we learn that Satan incites David or incites Israel, is against Israel. We get two things. We get misguided and we get misdirected. Satan rose against Israel and said, David, go ahead and count Israel. And David said, then we learned that David said he was sinful for doing this and all this kind of stuff. So, now I don't know about you, but I began to think and wonder, why is it so bad that he started counting people? Does anybody wonder that? Anybody wonder, what's the big deal? He's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, number one, many people believe this could have taken, there's a lot of people, maybe 6 million altogether, men, women, and children. We learn the numbers that are written in there, and it's also in 2 Samuel, I believe. But there's a specific reason for this being counted. Number one, it took about 10 months. It took about 10 months. And I'll tell you, this really ministered to me, because it ministered to me that God has called us to do something, and yet at times in my life, I have spent time wasted doing my own thing. Does that relate to anybody? That God wants to do something tomorrow, and it takes me 10 months to get my rear in gear. You know what I mean? And so David decided, number one, no, I know God wants us to go do this thing, but let's count how many people we got. So that's number one. David wasted time. God does not like us to waste his time. That's the first thing. The next thing is, you have to go to Exodus, the book of Exodus, to find this. In the book of Exodus, God tells Moses, whenever there is a census given, when you count the people, there must be a life ransom paid. So, for instance, I know some people in here work for the U.S. Census and did that. So when you went around and counted, if you counted the people, they would have to pay you for their life in a God census. So you would have to go, in order for Patty to get counted, I would say, okay, I'm going to count you. You owe me money. And what that would do in this time, and God said, I'm counting you. You go ahead and pay to give to the priesthood and to my, you know, my worship as being counted for your life. So what it was a count of ownership. What we have here is David was at the end of his career, and at the end of our career, we like to know that we had some impact, don't we? Whatever we do, we like to know that we've made some kind of splash in the water. I remember Dad was preaching the one week when I had surgery, and he said that the person said, if you fill a glass with water and you stick your finger in and pull it out, the hole that's left is really how much people are going to miss you when you're gone. You know what I mean? But we all like a hole in the water, don't we? We all love to know that when this body gives up, that we're going to have millions of people say, how else will we ever take another step in life without Jack Cohen? You know what I mean? Don't we? Do you just want to be like, say, okay, I'm dying, I'm gone, nobody will miss me? That's depressing, isn't it? Don't you want to be like in books where people talk about you for 100 years? That'd be cool, wouldn't it? You know, and so what we have, David was at the end of his life, and he said, I want a legacy. So he began to count how many people he had. Joab said, that's wrong. And he even left two tribes out to give the full count. And so what we have, first of all, is a belonging and an ownership problem. David was saying, Israel is mine, when God said, they never were yours, they're mine. Okay? So that's where he was aggravated at first. David was taking claim for something that wasn't his. The next thing was, it causes David and us too to trust in something else besides God. In this case, it was numbers. I'm going to trust in God. I heard Miguel say at the beginning, I'm not going to worry about my bills. I'm not going to worry about this. Anybody ever sat down and gone, do we have enough to do this? Anybody ever said, God, I'm going to tell you, before I sit down to these bills, you got to help it out. Here it is. Go for it. And then go ahead and do it. Is that our practice? Or we usually go, oh, Lord, how are we going to? You spent that at what? You know, Bed Bath and who? You know, we ask these questions. You need $30,000 from there? We go through this kind of stuff. Did you really, really need that extra loofah? You know, we ask those questions when we're trying to, and that's good, being good stewards. But the bottom line is, how many of us trust God first to supply? You know, remember I talked about getting to know God by his personality? One of the first names of God, right here on this Arana floor, was given to him by Abraham when he was called Jehovah Jireh. Because Abraham, on this same mountain, this threshing floor of Arana, right here, Mount Moriah, was getting ready to kill his son because God demanded it, and God provided a ram for the sacrifice. Do you know Jehovah Jireh? Do you know him? Do you know God is your provider? If you don't fully know him, guess what? You haven't spent enough desire to get to know him in that way. Okay? So that's one area. It causes trust. And another area is it was driven by personal pride. David wanted to say, I want to see how good I am. He wanted to be in the annals of history. And wanted to say, David took over. David was a great fighting man. David did this. David had all these people. And he could say, now I can go into battle. But you know what's interesting? Every time somebody did something like this, there was something that happened bad. For instance, in this case, David immediately knew. After how many months? 10 months? After 10 months of having other... Anytime he could have called it off. He could have 2 weeks later. You know, we like to think things in the Bible happen immediately. Like David said, go count them. And they went, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a tiger by his tail, every holler, let him go. Judah, right? Took 10 months. Anytime during that 10 months, he could have said, this is wrong. He waited till the count came down and then said, oh, I've sinned against God. And if I'm Joab, I would have said, no stuff. You wasted 10 months of my life counting, okay? Doing something that was wrong. But we do that all the time. We put our personal pride. And what is the old saying? Pride comes before a slam, a fall. fall. And David fell hard, and it caused the Israel to hurt. He had to choose whether we're going to suffer, and plague, and people began to die, and all this kind of stuff. And that brings me to the change in David's heart, the dot, dot, dot. I challenge you to read this chapter yourself, and as we finish up here today. When Satan stirs us, one thing happens, but when the Spirit stirs us, there's a new appetite for God. Not for what he can do. This goes back to what Jonathan Edwards said. Look at what Jesus said. Blessed are those who, and this is a translation from, not the NIV, from a different version, but it says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for God's approval. They will be what? Satisfied. Jesus was talking at the Sermon on the Mount to a bunch of people who were hungry because they were booted out of their houses. They were on the streets. And he said, I know you're hungry, but blessed are you who hunger and thirst after my Father. Blessed are you guys who have a desire for my daddy. You're the ones who are blessed, and you're going to be satisfied and full. Do you really hunger for God? This new appetite fosters something else. It fosters a personal and covenant relationship. Look at what David wrote in the psalm. Oh God, you are what? What? My God. Now, if I had five different people up here named Jacob, and I said, this is Jacob, this is Jacob, this is Jacob, this is Jacob, this is Jacob. Is that five? Did I give you five? Okay. But then if I said, hey, this is my Jacob, what does that tell you? What does it tell you when I say, this is my Jacob? He belongs to me. I belong to him. It immediately says I have a relationship with him. It immediately tells you I care about him deeply. It immediately tells you that there's something special about our relationship. Even in my action, I would put my, as I was telling you, my Jacob. So when David at this point goes, oh God, you are my God. There's something special there, isn't there? You are my God. And I will earnestly seek after you. I will thirst for you. In a dry and barren land, that's fine. He's saying, you know, people may be thirsty because there's not much water here, but I will be filled because I'm going to seek after you. He has a love for him that is incredible. David's desire came from being prideful and counting an eeny, meeny, miny, moe to a desire for God that was intense. And what he desired as he came to this threshing floor, this is an artist's rendition of the threshing floor of Arana. A threshing floor is a place way high, way up high, and what you do is you have wheat, and you got to separate the chaff, which is like the husk and everything else, and the wheat, they look the same, they look very similar, but how you separate them, you grab a pitchfork or a winnowing fork, you lift it up, you throw it in the air. I'll show you a picture in a second. And what happens in the high altitudes and with the air, it blows the junk away. And the good stuff falls to the earth. You gather it up, then you go make bread with it. Okay? This is what this place was. Now, historically, this is the mountain or the mountain range where, as I said, Abraham was going to sacrifice his son, Isaac. Now becomes this threshing floor of Arana. And I want to look at this story as we close, and I promise I won't take too long. But David goes ahead, after he's recognized he's had this problem, there's an angel that God sent as punishment, bringing a plague, and all of a sudden, God tells another angel, tells Gad, who is the prophet, to tell David, go up and build an altar of the Lord there. And so David goes up, and it's interesting, it says, in obedience. He goes up there. Arana and his sons are threshing wheat. They look up and they see this angel with a sword. Now, you're talking about something that will mess up your threshing? An angel with a sword. And he says to David, David comes up and says, hey, angel's still here. He says, hey, let me have, in verse 22, let me have the site of your threshing floor so I can build an altar to the Lord, that the plague on my people may be stopped. Sell it to me for the full price. The full price is estimated that it would probably have been about $100,000. So Arana, who probably wouldn't have to thresh much wheat anymore with $100,000 at that time. Now, if Arana, I'd be like, cha-ching, I don't want to do this anymore. Go for it. Here, give me the money. Arana's response shows that he has a desire for God as well, because he says, no, let me give it all to you. He said, I'll tell you what. I'll provide the sacrifice. I will provide the wood. I'm going to give you the mountain up here. I'm going to give you everything. We're going to make sure we have everything taken care of. I'll even give you the wheat that I've spent up here separating so that you can give a grain offering. That sounds like a pretty good deal, doesn't it? He doesn't have to pay a cent. He gets it all for free. It's a blue light special. Isn't that what we like? Because in our nature, we like stuff free, don't we? But David answers him, and I think this is one of the most telling verses of Scripture. And you can go to this next slide, and you can see you got another artist rendition. David says to him, no, I insist on paying the full price. And here's what I believe is one of the most important verses in Scripture about desire. I will not take for the Lord what is yours, or sacrifice a burnt offering that what? Costs me nothing. Desire costs something. Relationship costs something. We give up stuff for relationship. We give up stuff. Anybody here ever given up anything for your children? Mothers, I know, you give up food, you don't sit down at dinner, right? That happens. Have you given up anything for your children? Have you given up anything for that other person that you love? Have you given time? Have you given effort? What about God? What have you given up for Him? I'm not talking about Lent, that we give up chocolate for 40 days and then go, whoo, we're good now. I'm talking about what in your life needs to be burned away. Isn't it cool that right here on a place where God, where the people are, and you can look at this next slide, where the people are digging in and separating things that look the same, the bad stuff blowing away here, the good stuff falling here. When is the last chance you've allowed God and you've gone so close to God in your desire that God begins to take a winnowing fork and separate that stuff, part of your life that you think so important, and remove it away so that you just have good stuff that can be used for God? When's the last time you said, God, I want you to do this painful process in me? Because anybody ever had God remove something out of your life? It ain't always fun. You know what I mean? But guess what? The process isn't fun, but you grow closer to the Lord. And isn't that what, if we desire Him, what we want? You desire to be closer to Him? And you know, that's what causes people to be martyrs. It's not because they just say, today I'm going to go ahead and give my life up for Jesus. What caused them to give their lives up was because they had an intimate relationship with God, and they allowed God to winnow away everything that was wrong in them and to put everything in front that God could use and for His kingdom. What David desired in our last thing is, David had a desire for altar and costly living. I've said this before, but I want to ask you a question. In every church, we have nice, pretty altars. If you look at the Scripture, and I think there's a picture. Did I put a picture of an altar up here? I did not put a picture of an altar, I don't think. An altar was a stone thing where they used, and there was a sacrifice that was done. It tells us that David provided a burnt offering. We hear that, and we just think it's something that's burnt. That maybe he got the animal just a little too done. A burnt offering. All the other offerings were ones that you would bring, and there was a portion given to the priest. The burnt offering was one of total consumption. What David made a statement now in his sin is saying, God, I'm wrong. And he gives two offerings. He gives him a burnt offering and says, he takes a spotless, the best herd, and says, here it is. I'm sacrificing the best thing I have and giving it to you. Boom. And it's consumed, completely consumed by God. So I want to ask you, what is your burnt offering? What is the best that you have to offer, that you've offered to everything else, but not to God? What is that best thing that you have to offer to God? And are you willing, God, to consume that area of your life and do something incredible with it? The other thing that he offers is a fellowship offering. He says, God, I want to know you more. I desire to be closer to you. I've messed up, but I want to grow closer to you. If you're here today and you desire God to consume your life and so that you have an incredible connection to Him that you've never had before, then I want you to say to God, you know, we have an altar here. We're not going to kill anybody on it. But there's some stuff, if you're like me, that needs to be put to death in order that Christ can bring life. David, in this last slide here, what David did at this point, I gave you some history about Abraham and Isaac. I gave you some point about what was going on right now with Arana. This place was the place that became the temple. What God did through David's desire to know him is David's sin became a place where, this was a place where wheat and chaff were separated, that became a place where people began to sacrifice and worship. What are those areas of your life that need to be removed in order that you can have sacrifice and worship? That you can worship and give offering to God? I don't know for you, and I don't know whether this made any sense to you, but I can tell you, ask your heart, do you desire God and where do you desire? All right, we good? Everybody good? They're going to play a song, right? And I'm going to ask you to stand. I'm going to go over here to the altar because we're on God time today. And I'm just going to go ahead and just say, if you want to come up and you want God to separate some of that wheat and chaff in your life, I'll be here. I'll ask Stephen to come up and let me see. Bobby, would you also come up and pray with people? And we'll be here. Just please stand and worship God in this today.